Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Wednesday, December 27th. If you are one of those who is familiar with the Texas area, North Texas area, we don't usually get as cold as we are right now. We're at 34 at the moment. It's supposed to drop to 32 by tomorrow morning. So we're not used to this. So if any of your family or friends in North Texas are calling you complaining about the temperatures, please be patient and understand that we're not usually accustomed to these kinds of temperatures up here. Now, of course, we cannot complain because up in the north and the northeast, it's just absolutely horrific, the temperatures up there. So anyway, when you have these wintry temperatures, it's probably a good idea to talk about Cuba because Cuba, of course, being a tropical country, does not have these temperatures. So we can sort of talk about Cuba and warm up as we talk about Cuba. Today, we're going to be chatting with our friend Marcos Nelson Suarez. Marcos Nelson has been on our show a couple of times. As some of you may remember, he was the founder of El Hispano News here in Dallas. He came to the United States in 79 or 80 from through the Mariel program, has been a very successful businessman here in the Dallas area over the last several years. And what we're going to talk about, I want to get Marcos Nelson's perspective on what is happening in the island of Cuba. As you may know, Raul Castro was going to hand over power to his designated successor, a fellow by the name of Díaz-Canel, who is, for lack of a better, I don't know his full title, but let's just say he's the number two person in the Communist Party who will be inheriting the authority of running Cuba. At least on paper he is. We don't believe that that's going to be a full transition, but anyway, we can get into that in a minute. Everything was set up that way. The announcement had been made to the diplomatic embassies and so on, to the media. Everything was going to be in February. Everybody had been planning a departure by Castro in February. And then came the announcement just a few days ago that transition has now been moved to the month of April. Exactly why that happened, we will try to speculate tonight. The official reason is that the hurricane was so devastating and so disruptive, and it was, let's not deny that, so devastating and so disruptive that the transition had to be postponed simply because they didn't have time to work on the transition. That's the official explanation. It may be true, it may not be true, but that's the official explanation. I think there's probably more to it than that. It's just too simple to blame it on a hurricane. And for that reason, I wanted to invite tonight our friend Marcos Nelson to chat with us. Marcos Nelson, welcome. There you go. Welcome to the program. I hope you're freezing like I am.
Thank you. Good evening to our listeners, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to be in the program with you.
Thank you so much. Absolutely interesting topic. On a night when the temperature in North Texas does not resemble Cuba by any means. This
exactly.
Yeah, this is not the tropics tonight, to say the least. Well, I mentioned that, of course, you had come from Cuba in the 1980 in the Mariel program, and then you started the newspaper. Anything else that you wanted to add to that? I know you've gone online right now, so anything else that you wanted to add to my introduction?
Not really. I mean, you know, I just have the great privilege of being able to come into the United States and, you know, raise a successful family, have kids that I am very proud of. My daughter, I don't know if I mentioned to you, she's an officer in the Navy Reserve. She served 1 year in Afghanistan as a volunteer, and she has a wonderful job, and I am just waiting to die because I am getting old. So.
Okay. Well, we're very proud of your success. It's always great to talk to a Cuban who's done well in the United States. That's always a great deal of pride to us. Now, let's talk about Cuba itself. As you know, before I ask you about the change in the transition or the date from February to April, what was your reaction a few months ago when you heard that power in Cuba was at least on paper going to be transferred from Raul Castro to someone not related to the Castro family, and on top of that, someone who's primarily a bureaucrat? He's not a military person. He's not part of anything. He's just a bureaucrat. He's just a bureaucrat who happened to be maybe loyal to Raul Castro, who happened to be the designated successor. So what was your reaction, before we get to the speculation, what was your reaction to the news that power was going to be transferred to a non-Castro, Marcos?
It was really surprising, but let's face it, all the people who fought against Batista, who are called in Cuba the historicos, they are in their 80s. They are dying. So really, they don't have another choice after Fidel Castro died. I mean, after he left power because he was sick, and then he died, and his brother took over. In reality, there was not another figure that could really relate to the Cuban population. And this is very important. I mean, you have Castro, who, in any way you look at it, at least have some roots in the Cuban history, in the Cuban population, when it was almost a myth. Then his brother, who never had an extraordinary figure, never was somebody who really had charisma, taking power. So they don't have anyone else now. They are selecting this figure who, at this point, in every speech, in any public pronunciation, has been extremely loyal and trying to show himself as a hardliner.
Right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. His speeches have been very critical of President Trump. He has made a very strong effort to basically sound like a carbon copy of Raul Castro. You're exactly right about that. Now, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Were you going to say something else? Because I have a question. I have a follow-up to what you were just saying. Were you surprised? Because I didn't even know who this guy Díaz-Canel was. Had no idea. I mean, this was a fellow who obviously, I've been doing a little reading about him. He was apparently an engineer by education. He was born in 62 in that time range. So he grew up, as they like to say, by the time he was, you know, by the time he was 30 years old, let's say, the Soviet Union had already pretty much disappeared. So he wouldn't have the emotional connection, let's say, the point I'm trying to make is that if, for example, if this fellow was 70 years old, let's say younger than Raul Castro, but let's say 65, 70 years old, at least he would have a historical connection, if not to the actual revolution itself, but at least to the story. He would remember the missile crisis. He would remember, the Angola. But Díaz-Canel doesn't have a connection to any of that. He's basically a young man during all that time. So he now becomes the number two person out of nowhere, just literally out of nowhere. So he must be very good, or must be very loyal to Raul Castro, maybe both, Marcos Nelson.
Well, they need to pick it up somewhat, because let's face it, Raul is not young. And the interesting thing here is that when Raul took power, the when he announced I'm going to retire on 2018, then they did something that haven't been done before in Cuba, at least when Fidel Castro was in power. It's going to be term limits. I guess you understand that too. So Díaz-Canel is going to be there. I don't know if it's going to be 4 years, it's going to be 6 years, but it's going to be term limits. Hence, I think that they are trying to keep, to maintain the continuity of the system the way it is right now. How much can they do that? How much can they keep the ball rolling the same way that has been rolling until now is really the important question in the whole process.
Right, exactly. And we're not going to know that probably until about 5 years from now or something like that, exactly what the consequences are. But Díaz-Canel is, as you indicated, a bureaucrat and somebody who all of a sudden finds himself. He was even being introduced as the successor, I think, when President Obama went down to Cuba. He was introduced as the successor then. Now let's move the calendar to the moment. Just last week, Raul Castro announced that the transition would be delayed for a couple of months until April. Not exactly sure when in April, but let's say 2 months. This would be 2 months after February. And the official explanation was that the hurricane had been so disruptive, so bad, that it took them off their game, as they like to say in English. And they had to then they couldn't focus on the transition, and now they had to extend the transition to April. I don't buy that explanation, and I'll tell you why, my opinion, and that is because the transition, I mean, this hurricane, as bad as it could have been, would not necessarily affect when the new guy takes over. I think there's other things going on here, and so let me get your reaction first to the change from February to April, and then we can talk about what else is going on. So what was your reaction a few days ago when you heard that it was being changed from February to April? Your reaction to that, Michael Nelson?
Well, you know, all these communist systems, Cuban included, one of the characteristics that they have is that they don't like to be predictable. So it didn't really surprise me that much, but one question that still remains on the air, and we already mentioned this, is what happened to the Castro sons? Alejandro, I mean, you talking to me before we went into the air, you suggest the possibility that there could be a power struggle. It happened in China. It happened in the Soviet Union after Stalin died. So it is possible. But I have another possibility in mind. Look, Raul Castro is going to leave power with a horrible legacy of the economy going down the tubes with nothing to show for. I don't know if you're following me in that idea. Maybe
no,
he want to use this to move.
No, I think you're exactly right. Go ahead and finish your point. Go ahead, because I'm following you, but go ahead and finish your point.
Maybe he want to use, he has some, you know, some ideas in mind for the next 2 months where he can close his kingdom or his time in power. Something that is going to be positive, very positive, and he's going to be remembered with some positive legacy.
Right. Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's a good point. Go ahead.
Now, it is also true. I mean, we need to recognize that Raul Castro took certain very important measures in Cuba, including the opportunity for Cubans to travel and to have a passport, the liberalization of certain sector in the economy, kind of follow what China is doing in a very timid way. So that could be somehow a legacy. But the question is that he took that measure 3-4 years ago, but mm-hmm. the results in the economy in Cuba, that at the end is going to be the most important, has been that, I mean, they projected that 2017 will have a 2% growth. I believe that I only have been, if that much, 1.2. And that's nothing.
Right. No, that's nothing.
I mean, you can blame the hurricane, but the hurricane happened just 2 months ago, okay?
Right.
During the whole year, the growing of the economy has been nothing.
Right, and I think you're right. The point you make is that Raúl Castro may be looking for a time in the future when he can leave, when maybe things are better. I understand what you're trying to say. Of course, the question is, could things be better in April? Because I think what we're watching is part of the problem with the reforms, and you're exactly right, some reforms have been made. But the problem with the reforms is one of the things that Gorbachev discovered when he tried to reform the Soviet Union, Perestroika, as you probably remember, is that these kinds of systems, it's very difficult to reform these systems because they're so accustomed to operating. They're basically bureaucracies. And if you're at the very top, you're doing quite well. I mean, you get to have some privileges. So that's, you know, these bureaucrats are not exactly interested in changing anything. So that's a problem. Number two,
yes,
it is true that there have been some reforms, but the Cuban people have not really been given the opportunity to unleash, let's say, the talent or creativity of the Cuban people in terms of businesses and so on. Most of the businesses that have come into Cuba are joint ventures with what they like to refer to as Castro Inc., which is basically the family business, the military, and so on. So in the hotel business, yes, I think probably some people are doing well, but they're basically bureaucrats or part of the inner group, if you know what I mean. The guy at the street corner who has – the guy at the street corner with a bodega, for example, or the guy who wants to open a small business, he's really not – he doesn't really have that opportunity because there's no credit. There's no way – I mean, I'll just give you an example, a quick example. Remember about a year or so ago, a couple of guys wanted to go to Cuba and build a manufacturing operation to make tractors because they wanted to make tractors for the Cuban farmers. They eventually gave up on the idea. And one of the reasons they gave up with the idea is because nobody can buy a tractor. You can make all the tractors you want, but nobody can buy them in Cuba. So I think that the reforms, I don't see where the reforms are going to make Cuba any better in 2 months than it is right now. You also have the problem with Venezuela.
Right.
So the problem with Venezuela, that's not going to get any better. I don't think the problem with Trump is going to get any better. And let me just put this idea on the table and then please give me your reaction. We don't know what messages President Trump is sending to the Cuban leadership or to people underneath Raúl Castro. And again, this is speculation on my part. I don't know that this is true. But what if messages are going out to people, let's say, in the leadership, messages like, if you guys change, we would be willing to end the embargo and have a different relationship with Cuba, but you guys have to change. If that's happening, that's going to be a threat to Alejandro Castro and the family business that he's been running. Again, this is all speculation on my part, but since we don't know anything, I guess speculation is all I can have. So go ahead and make your point.
Exactly. Well, look, to start with, that condition has been put out there by every president, I don't know, since Reagan, that I remember. You change, we're going to, you know, put down the embargo, we're going to help you, we can build a society together, blah, 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 blah. I don't think that that is a point even that can be negotiated by back channels. That to me is that what you're suggesting. I don't think that that even makes sense. Because it's public. I mean, the position of the United States is public. Now, I want to say this also. Unfortunately, we as Cuban exiles or people who have interest in Cuba or people who are Cubans living in the United States, somehow we place, or we have to place all our hopes in what the United States government does. But traditionally, no communist country have ever changed because either outside influence or the change has come from down to up. It's only when Gorbachev, I mean, whoever is in top, decide, okay, it's time to change. So I don't think that at the end of that is a valid point to think about that, on what Trump can be saying to certain people in Cuba. The regime has been very effective in eliminate anyone who tried to go a little bit over the top or to show himself, I can be a leader. And if we look at the history of Cuba since 1959, every time that somebody, Camilo Cienfuegos, Che Guevara, and we have more people that I cannot remember the names right now, Malmierka, all these people, when they just went a little bit over the top, when they put their name out there suggesting I can be a leader, they disappear.
Right. I'm thinking of Ochoa. Wouldn't that be the case
Ochoa
of Ochoa?
Ochoa is not the case. Now, at the end, like you say, we just kind of speculate in what is going on with Raul Castro, and maybe we're just talking nonsense, but it doesn't surprise me because it's typical of the communist countries and has been typical of the Cuban government to try to do things that nobody expects.
Right. Well, that could be. And the point you made, I think it's an excellent point that you made about maybe things are so bad right now that he wants to leave when he's got something to show for it. That's a very good point, and one that I had not considered before. The only comeback that I would have to that point is that the situation is so bad right now, I don't think by April there's going to be a much better economy. In fact, one could argue that things will actually be worse in April than they are right now. So I understand. Because let me ask you one more question about Raul Castro, because there is a debate, and I don't share this, but many people say that Raul Castro is really a reformer, that he wants to, in a sense, walk away and be seen as a reformer around the world, you know, as the person who opened up Cuba, sort of like others have done in other countries. That may be what he wants, but I don't think I don't think he's got the economy right now. Things are so bad in Cuba right now that I don't see any waiting 2 months is not going to make things better. He might have to wait 6 months if that's what he's thinking, Marcos Nelson.
Well, look, Raul Castro is no reformer. Every reform that has been made in communist country has been made with one goal in mind. I need to stay in power. I need to survive. Okay? And I am almost sure that what he has been doing with all these so-called reforms is precisely to try to secure his grip on power and avoid something that could happen, and if people went to the streets and start complaining because they don't have anything to eat or they don't have any future, and that's why they went to the sea in raft or are looking for visa to try to get into the United States. Let's not forget, you mentioned Gorbachev. The intention of Gorbachev never, ever was to destroy the socialist system or to destroy the Soviet Union. For the contrary, he made a big mistake, but he went looking for a way to solidify the system.
Exactly. No, you're exactly right about that. And my point in bringing him up is that he I think he realized by 91, 92, maybe even before that, that you cannot reform these communist
exactly.
countries. You know, it's like the what is that great Cuban expression? Árbol torcido siempre. What is that great expression? Cuban expression?
Árbol árbol que crece torcido jamás su tronco endereza.
Okay, very good. I love that expression. My mother used to use that expression all the time, and
yeah.
It's a great expression because I think it applies to the Cuban government for our friends who don't speak Spanish. But it basically means that if a tree is crooked, it will always be crooked. I think would you think that's a pretty good explanation of it? Yeah, I mean, it's basically if a tree is crooked, it's always crooked. You cannot just straighten it out like you can something else. But I think it's fair to say that I am speculating because I first of all, I was surprised when I heard that he was going to be retiring, and now I'm surprised maybe I shouldn't be, that he's going to be leaving 2 months later. I just think that there's stuff going on in Cuba in the background.
Maybe.
A lot of it. A lot of it. And I'm simply saying that there's a lot of stuff up in the air that we can't quite grasp up here. But I wouldn't be surprised if there are people within the power structure who realize that the minute this guy is gone, we have to change this. And I don't know if Díaz-Canel is the person who can do that. He's probably not the person because he's too close to Castro. But there may be somebody underneath him who may see that opportunity. Again, I don't know. I don't know. We're simply speculating. But I would expect that 2018 is going to be an unpredictable year in Cuba. How is that for a final thought?
You got it. You got it. Remember this. China is cutting his investment in Cuba 50% because they are not receiving payment.
That's true.
And China is communist or whatever you want to call it, but they see everything in the dollar side.
Mm-hmm.
Venezuela is not in condition to help anyone. And Cuba is not going to get credit because they have been trying to negotiate credit. They never pay. And most countries know that.
Right.
So I agree with you. 2018 could be very interesting for Cuba.
Well, what I see is a Cuba that has put itself in a situation where every window is closed. You're right about China. You're right about the others. But there's one window that is open, and that window is getting back, or the United States. The United States is the only country willing to say, hey, we will work with you, but you got to do this. Now, in 1981, you're exactly right. Ronald Reagan had a delegation in Mexico City talking to Cuba. I was in Mexico City at the time, and I remember that. And that delegation was trying very hard to get Castro to change. That was 1981. This is 2017, almost 2018. I just think that right now every window has closed to the Castro regime. I don't know where else they go. I mean, they can always go back to the Cuban people and say, va a ser un año muy difícil. They've been saying that too many times. You know what I mean? At some point,
they
people say,
hey, you know, for 15 years.
That's it. That's it. And that's it. But anyway, well, we're not going to fix it all tonight, but I do want to thank you so much for your contributions. You obviously have a very good vision of what's happening in Cuba. And I want to thank you as well for joining us tonight, and get covered up with those blankets, because I don't think you ever had temperatures like this in Cuba, did you? I don't remember temperatures like this in Cuba.
Of course
not. I don't. Thank you very much, Marcos. Un abrazo. Thank you very much, Marcos Nelson Suarez, our good friend here in Dallas. Thank you very much. Our friend Marcos Nelson Suarez, as I mentioned in the introduction, he was the founder of El Hispano News, a great newspaper here in the area. It's also online, and I have a link to that on the show information. If you're in Miami or out of the area, check the link and follow the newspaper. It's a good newspaper. It has a lot of good coverage, a lot of good reporters. And Marcos Nelson, of course, has a very good pen. He writes well, and he's very analytical and understands issues quite well. So we hope that you'll follow his material. Well, that's going to do it, folks. Thank you so much for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. As I mentioned, in the low 30s and going to get colder. So we're thinking about Cuba because we'd rather be in Cuba's weather tonight than in the weather that we have. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.